college football fans. This is your show, and this is The Roar.
We welcome you back in, everybody. Facts on Sports with Facts and Childress and John Hite continues right here on The Roar. 654-ROAR is the number. We're talking Braves baseball here in hour number two. We're talking playoff outlook. We're talking deadline. Anthopoulos said on 680 The Fan that they were looking to make a trade last week, and it can be difficult in June, and they're looking to get into July, and the Braves are trying to upgrade their roster. All the good things that are checking the boxes, right, of what you want to hear from your general manager when, let's face it, this team's been in a little bit of a hole. But I feel pretty good about what the outlook looks like as of right now. The biggest issue I have to date is Sale's timeline. Like I told you guys, I felt pretty confident that the Braves could get back into the swing of things with Sale. Without Sale, obviously, that changes the outlook to a certain degree, but it didn't impact it too much last night as you took home a 7-4 win over those New York Mets. Now, you went down 3-0 in the bottom of the fourth. Strider goes five, gives up three on two hits, eight strikeouts and four walks. He gave up a garbage bloop to Brent Beatty with two outs and two on, and it was like a 67-mile-an-hour exit velo blooper that just landed right between the perfect spot in the outfield. And the Mets take a 3-0 lead. And I think all the Braves fans, listen, we're all confident going into games against the Mets, but a three-run deficit feels like an 18-run deficit for this current rendition of the Braves. So admittedly, this was the first time playing the Mets all year that I was a little bit concerned.
So some of y'all on Twitter last night were really concerned.
It was, no, John, like, this was pathetic. Like, we you know what, the whole spiel I did on Montas, right, and about how he had a 13 ERA in AAA. That joker went five scoreless innings and only gave up three hits. He struck out five. The Braves had terrible ABs against Montas pretty much the entirety of the time he was in there. So I was concerned. Thankfully, Brazaban came in, and then Castillo came in, and those guys gave us five in one inning of work after Montas' departure, so the Braves were able to hop on that bullpen and jump down their throat, and, you know, the catalyst for this, again, was the walks, and that's what Ted was kind of talking about on the phone lines. So Ozuna walks, Riley walks, Baldwin walks. Admittedly, with bases loaded three outs, or bases loaded no outs, rather, I would have guessed that there was no way the Braves were going to score three runs to tie this game. I don't understand how you could watch this team this year with the bases loaded and have any other impression at that point. So Ozzy, it's a sack fly. Riley gets to third, and I'm like, all right, that's all we're getting. It's probably going to be a double play ball here. Well, Eli White gets a little infield single. He gets an RBI. Then Harris gets hit by the pitch, and you reload the bases. Then our guy, Nick Allen, big RBI single to score Drake Baldwin. Acuna strikes out, but with two on and two out, two out and the bases loaded, Olsen comes through with another clutch hit to give the Braves a 5-3 lead, and they don't look back. Olsen adds another insurance run with an RBI double of Acuna in the eighth. Riley also doubles to score Olsen and keep the assembly line moving. And then Iglesias, you know, we're going to use locks it down loosely in the ninth inning after De Los Santos got himself into a little bit of trouble, and the Braves bled a run late. 7-4 victory. Bullpen did enough. Strider did enough, and Olsen comes through at big moments once again for the Atlanta Braves.
Hold on. We're not going to get off that easy. Bullpen did enough.
Bullpen was good.
Iglesias got a save. I've had to come in here for the last 2 months, and we're talking about how can we send him past AAA to AA because he's so bad with his contract. How do we trade him back to the Angels, and we're not going to give credit where it's due?
Man
came in and got a save.
The Braves.
Well, I was told by Braves fans that's impossible for him to accomplish.
It does feel worth acknowledging that before, I guess 2 days ago's game against Dylan Lee, the Braves had gone 31 straight games without a save, which is the long shot franchise record for games without a save. The previous record was 24. Like, they broke it by seven. The Braves fans complain about a lot. There's some legitimacy to the back end of the bullpen thing and the Iglesias thing, and he generally is an up and down roller coaster. However, if you do look at Iglesias' game log and you look at, let's say for sake of convenience, his last five appearances, no runs in his last six. So ever since he was taken out of the closer role and blew the save, John, against the Arizona Diamondbacks on the fifth, we all remember that horrible, horrible loss where we blew like the 7-run lead or whatever it was. Ever since Iglesias has shifted roles, I haven't had complaints. Iglesias hasn't given up a run since he's been removed from that closer spot. And last night was the first time we had seen him back in the closer spot since that disaster, right, in Arizona. And he held his own. He did his job. So I'm willing to tip the cap. I'm cool with holding on to Iglesias if he is the setup guy that is used sparingly as the closer. But the Braves' closer should be Dylan Lee. I do want to make that abundantly clear. Like, if that is the guy that you are pointing to in your bullpen that I have the most confidence in, I'm pointing at Dylan Lee, and I'm giving him the ball 10 times out of 10 right now with the way he's throwing for Atlanta. His slider is one of the most efficient pitches in baseball. He's been phenomenal all year. But I've kind of, I wouldn't say walked back, but I'm chilling with Iglesias right now being the current role he is in the bullpen. If we need to spot save him, right, or it's righties or it's a better matchup, I'm cool with him going out there in the ninth. But he has really found his groove again being that setup guy in the seventh, eighth inning. And a lot of the times, John, too, when you look at this, it was two-thirds of an inning 2 days ago. It was a third of an inning on Wednesday the 18th. He doesn't have to be the guy that comes in and gets you three. Sometimes you just need him to come in and get you one. And with that pressure alleviated off of Iglesias, his ERA has dropped from 6.75 to 5.65 in his last six appearances, and he hasn't given up a run. So I'm cooling with Iglesias right now. Keep him in the eighth inning. If you need to use him last night because another guy gets into a little bit of a pickle, I'm also cool with that. But I haven't had issues for the most part of how Snitker's managed the bullpen ever since removing Iglesias from the closer role. I like the by-committee thing, and I think Lee should get more looks than the rest of the team. So that's where I'm kind of at on the bullpen. I'm not as upset with the Braves' bullpen as most. I haven't been all year. I've been reiterating the point that the unit is good. They have blown too many saves, and the back end has been bad, and that is where they need to acquire some more talent at the deadline. But if you're telling me for the indefinite future that Iglesias is my right-handed guy for the seventh and eighth inning, I'm good with him in that role. That's where I'm at on Iglesias.
Well, good to know. I just saw last night that he got a save and wanted to make sure we give credit where it is due because we have spent a lot of time on these airwaves.
Iglesias has got some slander. Yeah, Iglesias has got some slander. Mail carrier Keith does get in and say should not have been a safe situation. Correct. He had to bail De Los Santos out because De Los Santos got himself in a little bit of trouble. So you are right by saying that. But Iglesias came in and did enough and held the job down. Our guy 094 says, I'll be back at Taco Mac tonight to watch the Braves. I'm jealous. Wish we had a Taco Mac up here, man. The last game I saw at the Mac was the 2-1 loss to the Rockies at the end of April, hoping for better luck tonight. Brother, if we lose tonight, I'm blaming you, 094. Let me just say that because that Rockies loss... That Rocky's loss will forever haunt me, but enjoy Taco Mac, man. Get some wings in my honor. Texter gets in. He still gave up a run. He's good for a run, an outing, run scoring double at least. Yeah, listen, Iglesias is no longer the quality of player that he was. He's good enough to be in the seventh and eighth inning, though. That's where I'm at. I think he's a seventh, eighth inning guy for the indefinite future. I think Lee's your closer. So it is what it is. He did give up two hits 2 days ago. He did give up that run scoring double last night. But again, as mail carrier Keith points out, De Los Santos was the one that got you into that trouble. Now, again, this is why I think the Braves bullpen gets a little bit too much blowback in totality. That was De Los Santos's first earned run in nine appearances for the Atlanta Braves. Like, I don't think people realize how good De Los Santos has been as of late. Or not nine appearances. It was actually, there was a stretch of nine appearances. He gave up four to the Rockies in that game where the Braves had a meltdown on getaway day. But if you look back through Eniel De Los Santos and his appearances for the Braves this season, in the month of June, De Los Santos had a really bad first 2 months of the season, and since then, he's been the Braves' second-best reliever. Listen to this, John. So in the month of June, he has a 4.50 ERA. Or in the month of April, he has a 4.50 ERA. In the month of May, he has a 4.76 ERA. He gets to June, 1.69 ERA in the month of June. He gives up two earned runs in 10 and two-thirds for the whole month. He gets into this month, and you look at the 5.87 ERA in July, and you're like, man, what happened? Four of those runs came in one inning. In the other 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 appearances, he's given up one earned run. He had one meltdown against the Rockies on getaway day where it was already out of hand. So the Braves have better options than people believe to be available in the bullpen. De Los Santos has started to really turn things around. Iglesias is a little bit better than he has been. He's been good in the seventh, eighth inning. Dylan Lee's been good. You still need another arm. You still need another arm, and that's where I'm at. John, as we shift gears for Atlanta and start to talk about the game tonight before we move further in the program, because I got some Clemson football topics to bring to the table today as well. I want to talk a little bit about tonight. When we were previewing this series, I said that if the Braves were going to lose a game in this series, it was going to be tonight with Didier Fuentes on the mound because the Mets have a massive pitching advantage tonight, just to be blunt. Clay Holmes is getting the call for New York. Now, I will say this about Clay Holmes. The Braves lit him up in his last appearance. He's a guy that has a 3.04 ERA on the season, but he had been phenomenal for 2 months straight before coming into Atlanta and had a little bit of a meltdown, man. Six walks, three earned runs, didn't get out of the fifth inning. The Braves were really able to impact the Mets once again last night in a very similar fashion to what they did in the first series against New York by taking pitches and chasing starters and getting into that bullpen. And with the Mets bullpen that's already been pretty heavily taxed throughout the course of this series, the number one objective tonight for the Braves needs to be chasing Clay Holmes out of this game as soon as humanly possible. Because let's face it, you have a 20-year-old making his second major league start on the road. Hostile environment in New York. It'll be a good crowd in Citi Field tonight, I'm sure. Even in the midst of the slump, they still sell their tickets. Fuentes is up against the odds tonight, all right? He's got to pitch against Lindor, Soto, Alonso. Three of the top 20 players in baseball seems fair for those three. So the Braves are going to give up some runs tonight, and Fuentes is probably going to get popped for three or four. That's just the reality of the situation. I see this going pretty similarly to the way that the Miami Marlins game did for Fuentes, which is, let's get me through 4 2/3 or five innings, and let's give up three or four runs. And you know what? If he does that, the Braves have a chance to win this game. But I think it's imperative to chase Holmes early in this game, John, in a very similar fashion to what you did the first time you played him last week, because that's the reason the Braves won the game. And this is the best pitcher in the Mets rotation as of right now. Your thoughts?
I'm just curious, are you going to see any offensive production tonight for guys not named Ronald Acuña Jr. and Matt Olson?
Yeah. The rest of the supporting cast needs to step up, specifically Riley and Ozuna, who have been pretty garbage for the better part of the last 2 months.
I definitely think that they've had some bright spots. I mean, over the course of these last 2 months, there have been weeks where Austin Riley is carrying That's things true. Offensively. There have been times where when Ozuna has been the only quality bat in the lineup. I don't want us to get too reactionary here with talking about this team, which I know we can do when it comes to the Atlanta Braves. But to me, it's just continuing to find consistency. And honestly, I don't have much to analyze when it comes to these next two games. The Braves are going to win them. It's just, do you show up against Philadelphia? Do you show up against the Angels?
Yeah.
That is going to be my reoccurring point with the Atlanta Braves. I don't really care what you do against the Mets, because you're right, it's a full-on ownership. The Mets completely concede when they get to the ballpark.
These are given wins.
It has been that way outside of the first one that went extras. Ever since the extra inning game, it's pretty much been that way. But, like, what does Atlanta do next week when they're having to go up against Ron Washington, who is the greatest third base coach in the history of baseball? They're probably going to lose 2 or 3.
Yeah.
You know, how do you handle the atrocious Baltimore Orioles? How do you handle going to Oakland, where you have to play your latest games remaining on the rest of the regular season? Like, those are my issues with the Braves. It's they look at the Mets and they light up, but the problem is they don't really take that to other opponents.
You got to treat every opponent like it's the Mets. And like, I know we use the faceless, nameless opponent. I want to completely redact that and just say, can we strap Mets on front of everybody's jersey for the Braves from a mental standpoint? I do think there's validity to John's point that I'm not really concerned about playing the Mets. The Braves are going to win the series against the Mets. The Braves are going to win the series season against, or the season series rather, against the Mets, because they always do. But it's about, you know, what you're doing against the rest of those opponents, and more specifically some of the lower quality opponents, because we reference the fact that the Braves have played one of the toughest schedules in Major League Baseball, and it's 100% wholeheartedly the truth. But in a weird and backwards way, the Braves actually haven't really even been that bad against the good teams they've played.
It's
the bad teams.
Yes, exactly. The two toughest schedules that have been played so far this year are the Braves and the Pirates.
Yeah.
And the Braves lost 2 of 3 to those Pittsburgh Pirates. The Braves don't take the bad teams seriously enough.
Yes.
It's been like kind of my reoccurring point with this team. Like, they take like the, oh, game 3 against the Rockies isn't important.
You I can't know, believe I, they lost 2
Getaway
that team,
day
so.
Against the Nationals. This isn't all that important. That's the problem I have with the Braves. It's not the talent of the team. It's when you face teams that are less than you, and you come in with the approach of, we're fine. It's all good. Check's still going to clear.
Yeah.
That's my issue with this team. You know, and so I expect them to win tonight and to win tomorrow. Take the sweep of the Mets again. Probably play pretty well against Philadelphia. Maybe take 2 of 3 at home, win that series. But then it's like the next three series after that are what really worry me about the Braves.
Yeah.
That you lose like 6-9 against the Angels, the Orioles, and the Athletics because, well, they're not at the top of the standings.
It's about keeping that mental fortitude and about, you know, continuing to apply the same level of intensity from a game-to-game basis. And listen, it's baseball, right? It's a process. You're going to dump games. Like, the Braves probably are going to lose tonight with the pitching matchup, and then they'll probably bounce back and win tomorrow. It's a high-variance game. You're going to lose games. Like, even the Rockies thing. Like, I know I've dug my heels in on that specifically. It is what it is, man. Like, the worst team in baseball can go beat the best team in baseball in a series tomorrow, and that's just kind of what part of what makes the game great, if you will. But Atlanta's got to stay focused. Because I'm not giving up yet. I've said this repeatedly. I'm not giving up yet. I don't think the season's over. I think this core I think this core of players is good enough to win. And then when you look at the National League, yeah, you're up against the odds in the wild card spot. But you got a really beneficial schedule and an advantageous schedule on the back half. You're getting Profar back. You got guys that you're projected to try and bring in at the deadline at minimum to improve that bottom half of the order and potentially get a little bit better in the field as well throughout the course of that process. This team has undeniable strengths. It's the best defensive team in baseball. They've got a really good pitching staff when healthy and their full arsenal of arms available. It's just about chipping away. And I've said this whole time since they started 0-7. Be 500 at the deadline. Or beat 500 at the All-Star break, rather. Get to 500, man. Get to 500. There is no reason the Braves can't be 500 at the All-Star break with the way that I view this. Just in reality. You are not playing very good teams after the Mets for the next couple of weeks outside of Philadelphia. You just aren't. And if you can't make up four games against two against the Mets, three against the Phillies, three against the Angels, three against the Orioles, three against the A's, and three against the Cardinals, you should be able to make up four games of equity. That doesn't seem like some massive or unrealistic ask, but again, you have to go out there and hit the ball and win the games. So, easier said than done. We'll talk pitching matchup for tonight. A little bit more stuff on Didier Fuentes, because I think he was uber impressive, and I think this kid's going to be a star for the Atlanta Braves, even just at the young age of 20. He's obviously got so much to learn and so much room to grow, but early indications are that this is going to be a prospect that pays off for Atlanta. We'll talk a little about Grant Holmes versus Griffin Canning tomorrow, and then start to preview how the pitching matchups are aligning up actually back at home against Philadelphia. And another part of why I think the Braves are in a really advantageous spot, John, to go on a little bit of a run here. How about three series at home where you play very, very well right after that New York series? The time to strike is now. We'll continue to talk Braves with Scott from Greenville on the phone lines on the other side of a short break here with Faxon and John on the Roar.
William Nichols from Scores Jewelers. You know, I'm very fortunate to work in an industry that's almost entirely focused on celebrating life's good times and milestones. Like the anniversary highlighting 5, 10, 15 years or more spent with your best friend, birthdays and Christmases, and maybe the biggest day of all, the marriage of two people. Her engagement ring is more than just a diamond and a piece of gold. On the day it's given as a gift, it becomes a meaningful symbol marking the start of your new life together. In a few years, you won't remember the price tag on her engagement ring, but you will remember that look on her face when you open the box. That moment of sheer joy and excitement that says so many things to her that you could never express in words. This is the true value of a ring. The reason these things are handed down from one generation to the next. She's the one. Show her with the ring from Scores Jewelers. We'll help you find or make the perfect ring that says everything you want to say the moment you open the box for her. I'm William Nichols of Scores Jewelers in Anderson and online at scoresdiamondjewelers.com, and I want to be your jeweler.
When you wake up well-rested on a great mattress, everything becomes clear.
I do have a favorite child.
Things you missed when you were tired finally reveal themselves.
I should have just said the baby was cute.
It's the actually really seriously best sale of the year for real at Mattress Firm. Get a king bed for a queen price. Save up to $700 on Sealy and get a free adjustable base, plus fast free delivery. The right mattress matters. We'll find yours. Restrictions apply. See store or mattressfirm.com for details.
Hey, Mom, checking in on you and Dad. I saw there was a huge storm in your area last night.
Oh, we're great. Power is out in our neighborhood, but thank goodness our Generac home standby generator gave us backup power so your father could sleep. We didn't skip a beat.
Oh, wonderful. I know that CPAP is his lifeline at night, and with me living a state away, I can rest easy knowing you're both safe. Love you, Mom.
Love you too, son.
Call Central Electrical Services at 864-556-8002 for your free estimate today and peace of mind for your loved ones.
For a true Tiger, every day is game day. And the Tiger Sports Shop has the gear to prove it. From Nike sideline apparel to exclusive Lululemon and Clemson polos, tees, and hats, we've got what you need to rep your Tigers in style. Plus, by joining our Tiger Rewards loyalty program, you'll earn points and unlock exclusive perks throughout the season. Shop local at our two Clemson locations or online anytime at tigersports.com. The Tiger Sports Shop, your Clemson headquarters, everything Clemson for the Clemson fan.
Go Tigers!
Missing shingles, granules in your gutters, or water staining on your ceiling are all warning signs, visual cues that your roof is in need of repair. The next time you check your mail or back out of your driveway, take a glance at your roof, make note of any damage, and call Adams & Co. Roofing for a free no-obligation roof inspection. Adams & Co. Roofing's expert team members will assess the damage and provide top-quality repairs if needed to keep your roof and everything under it safe and sound. Don't wait for a small issue to become a big problem. Call Adams & Co. Roofing today.
Tired of the same old look? Want to get a fresh, stylish haircut for the summer? Rooster's Grooming is the place to be. With highly skilled barbers and a comfortable, relaxed environment, Rooster's Grooming offers a unique grooming experience that's second to none. Whether it's a classic cut or a modern style, their team can make it happen. So why wait? Get your summer haircut at Rooster's Grooming. Make an appointment today by calling 864-884-8920. Rooster's Grooming, where style meets tradition.
Out here, you get your hands dirty. You get to work and finish the long summer day knowing you made it count. Whether it's cutting the grass, picking the garden, firing up the grill, or washing your dog, you get things done. It's the small stuff that adds up to this life you love. At Tractor Supply, we know that feeling. And we've got the supplies and friendly advice you need to get the most out of every day, all summer long. Tractor Supply, for life out here.
Broadcasting live from the Upcountry Fiber Studios, this is 105.5 and 97.5 The Roar. Upcountry Fiber is a stronger connection.
Summer heat's rising, and so is the anticipation. Clemson football is coming.
They operate off the right hash. Kane takes a shotgun snap. Back to pass pressure coming. Throws it right side, looking for more. One more time. Did he catch it?
He caught it.
Oh, he did. Inside the 15.
What a catch.
What a brilliant catch. They're going to mark it inside the 10.
Stay locked in. 105.5 at 97.5 FM. Part of the ESPN family.
Second hour of the program continues here on a Wednesday with Faxon and John. Let's hit Scott from Greenville on the phone lines, who waited patiently through the break. Scott, always a pleasure. How we living?
How you doing, man?
Doing well, doing well. Very blessed. A lot going on in the sports world, even during the summer, here with some Major League Baseball and NBA draft today.
Yep, yep. And it's already blazing hot out here.
Oh, man. You're telling me. Goodness gracious.
Hey, Braves, they're blazing hot right now, too, it seems, against the Mets. You know, they're 7-3 their last 10.
Yep.
And if they stay at 7-3, 6-4 over the course of every 10 games, you know, and they just keep that rolling, they're going to be just fine. The addition of Profar next week is going to help the lineup a lot. I'm not concerned about his troubles or what. That doesn't bother me at all. Put him in the lineup. Let's play. Let's get some wins. And I think that they saw last night that Eli White should be playing.
Yeah.
They put him in the game. He went 1-for-3, scored a run, had an RBI. And if he does that every day, he's in the Hall of Fame. And I know that because I just watched an interview with Tim Kirchin talking about that's what Chipper Jones' goal was every day, was to go 1-for-3 with scoring a run and getting an RBI. And if you did, and Chipper Jones had 1,600 of, he had 1,600 runs scored, 1,600 RBIs in his career, and he's in the Hall of Fame. So, you know, it's going to work out just fine. But a rolling 7-3, 6-4, they're going to be fine. I'm actually going down Friday to watch them play the Phillies.
Yep.
And I'm curious to see. I hadn't looked to see who's pitching yet. We were going to go Sunday, and it was going to be Strider, but now with the hurt, the problems with Sale and all that, I don't know who's pitching Friday yet, but that's what I'm going down to watch him. Hopefully all goes well there. But
it's Bryce Elder versus Mick Abel on Friday for you.
Okay. That should be a decent matchup then. And I'm interested tonight with Fuentes because Murphy said that the reason that he gave up 5 runs and had a couple of bad pitches was because of Murphy.
Yeah.
And Murphy said, I didn't know him. I hadn't, you know, caught him. I didn't know him, but you'll see that get a lot better. So I am interested tonight to see how the. I'm not as concerned with the win or the loss, even though, I mean, you want the win, but yeah. With Fuentes, I'm interested in how many runs are we giving up? How many hits are we giving up? You know, how does that look? Because if the Braves ain't hitting, then Fuentes go out there and pitch the gym, we'd still lose 2-1.
Right.
You know?
I think that I'm in full agreement with you. I kind of entered the series under the impression that the Braves were going to win 3 of 4 and drop this one. I'm just excited to watch Fuentes pitch again, man. I mean, the kid's got absolutely electric stuff. And, you know, Murphy gave quotes of, we're only scratching the surface with him. Everybody should be excited about the guy they saw tonight. I thought he was awesome, phenomenal. We had a couple pitches we went back, a couple mistakes that I made because I'm trying to learn him. I think there's way more meat on the bone as far as the things he can do. So, listen. This kid showed unbelievable promise in his first start and really just made one bad pitch, Scott. And it was that low and in curveball that he let catch a little bit too much in the middle of the plate, and Sanchez took him for a ride. But I would like to see him incorporate his splitter more tonight. I think the fastball's got jump. The slider's looking pretty good, and it's got some bite to it as well. So I think we're talking about Didier Fuentes as a guy that's going to be a staple in the rotation for years to come. I don't know if that's going to be the case immediately when the Braves have their full weaponry available to them with Sale and Lopez and eventually getting Smith Shawver back in the fray next year as well, right? But this is a guy that is more than capable of providing spot starts as of right now, is going to keep getting better and learning more each and every time out, and tonight's going to be a big test for him on the road in front of a massive crowd and in front of a really good team and lineup in the New York Mets, so I'm excited to see what he's got.
Well, the Mets are 1-9 against a bunch, you know, a lot different pitchers and stuff, yeah. But in their last 10, But, you know, Fuentes, there's not a lot of film on him. So, you know, knowing how he's going to do and what he's going to do, now that's going to change the more he pitches. But right now, you know, that's why Drake was so good. And nobody had film on him. And now you're starting to see him come back to home. But with Fuentes, I like the fact that, you know, second or third start against the Mets. And I think that bodes well for us. I actually think we might win tonight. I think it's going to be a struggle, but I think we might do it. So hoping so. Anything to keep that goose egg in that loss column against the Mets, I'm all for it. So, but anyway, enjoying the show, guys, and good luck to you. We'll talk to you later.
Yeah, appreciate you checking in with us, Scott. 654 Roar is the number. I will wrap back to Braves at some point, but we're going to shift gears. I want to talk Clemson football. I want to talk wide receivers today, John, but I actually just saw a tweet come across the timeline from Chapel Fowler during this last break that I wanted to read off as kind of a fun topic for the audience. So Chapel apparently saw Cade Klubnik at the Chick-fil-A in Clemson and asked him what his go-to Chick-fil-A order is. I'm about to give off QB1's Chick-fil-A order here, all right? This is great work from Chapel Fowler, as always. Cade says that his go-to is the 12-count chicken nugget, fry, and an Oreo shake. Then he gets a side of the 3-piece chicken strip with the Chick-fil-A sauce and some Polynesian sauce. Then he gets a side Powerade. And if he's really hungry, he'll swap out the strips for a Chick-fil-A sandwich, no pickles, and add pepper jack. Before we start talking wide receivers and position groups, thoughts on QB1's Chick-fil-A order and any similarities with your Chick-fil-A order with QB1?
Some, but I'm also not 22 years old playing a college sport where I can burn off all that type of food.
right. I was about to say, that's more than I've got, you know, available in my stomach on an order-to-order basis from Gabe.
The only issue I take with his order is the no pickles part.
That's okay. See, weirdly enough, I really like pickles, but I don't like the pickles on the Chick-fil-A sandwich specifically for whatever reason. I don't know, really know what the dynamic is there, but I remove the pickles. So your team pickle at Chick-fil-A is what I'm hearing.
Very much so.
Okay. Get in on the Adams Corby text line here, because I have a feeling we're going to see some divide at 654 Roar. If your team pickle or no pickle at Chick-fil-A, I get the pickles removed, but I like pickles if it's just like eating. Like a side pickle, like if you go to like a deli, like I'll eat that 10 times out of 10, but on my Chick-fil-A sandwich, for whatever reason, I've always been anti-pickle, but I share some common ground with Cade. I usually go with the spicy chicken sandwich with no pickles, and I add the pepper jack. If you haven't added the pepper jack, you're missing out. I don't know if people like spicy stuff as much as I do, but the pepper jack there is definitely a play from QB1. So definitely funny seeing that this morning from Chapel. And shout out to him because that definitely gave us a good laugh. 654 Roar is the number if you want to check in. Texter gets in and says, my thoughts, that NIL check is fat. That's a $30 meal at Chick-fil-A in 2025, brother. That's a good point. That's a good point, but something tells me that Cade's not too struggling too much, rather. Texter gets in and says that order is not on the PhD weight loss plan. No, no, it is not 113. No, it is not. Okay, we've got a wild card on the text line here. Extra pickle is what Josh says. Josh is going with extra pickle. Have you ever pulled that out of the bag, John? I didn't know that was an option.
It is an option, but no, I have not. I think the amount that they normally give me is a fair amount for the sandwich.
Okay, I think that's fair as well. Texter gets in, absolutely 100% no freaking pickles, and then another texter also follows that up with, have to get the pickles. So this is exactly the divide that I wanted, and you know what, I'll throw up a poll. I'll throw up a poll at theroarfm.com real quick. Give me a second momentarily, and we can get a poll up for you guys, but definitely always enjoy talking about the non-sports stuff and getting everybody's opinions and surveys on stuff we can all relate to. Another texter gets in and says, Polynesian sauce is awful, Chick-fil-A sauce all day. No Polynesian slander, man. Come on. Lock in 113. That's not acceptable. I'm not going to sit here and stand for that, John. I usually go with the Polynesian. Texter says, my daughter is a weirdo and gets extra pickles, then usually takes mine as well. Hey, there you go. Text, okay. 857 and a couple others are coming out of the woodwork here on Team Extra Pickle, saying that two pickles is not enough. So maybe I'm missing a part of the culture here from a contingent of folks that are coming out of the woodwork. I didn't realize that this was as strong of a thing at Chick-fil-A. I didn't realize everybody didn't take the pickles off, if you want me to be honest with you. All my friends and family take the pickles off. 744 says the great pickle divide. Another texter gets in and says, I do the pepper jack on the spicy. It's like the pepper jack balances the spice well, which is weird. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Texter gets in and says, be a man, 30 count nugget inside of pickles. I wish my wallet was doing that well. And also, I wish I had the metabolism for that, brother. 146. Lord knows I need it. I need to gain some weight. So maybe I need to start being a man and grabbing that 30 count nugget. See if I can get myself a little NIL deal or something. Another texter gets in and says they go with the honey barbecue sauce. I think that's quality. That's top notch. Okay, we can open this up a little bit, John, to the condiment discussion. So if you got a go-to condiment, this doesn't just have to be Chick-fil-A. We can open this up to just generality. What would your go-to condiment be and why? Because I feel like a lot of people are varying in a mixed bag on the text line on the condiment
topic.
What am
I using a condiment for?
Okay, so let's say for the hypothetical exercise, this condiment is for the chicken sandwich. The Chick-fil-A chicken sandwich, you can do whatever you want with the pickles.
I don't put anything on the sandwich. I eat the sandwich as they hand it to me. Just take it out the bag.
Plain sandwich?
Well, with the pickles on it, yeah.
Really?
Order the regular or the spicy, take it as it comes, absolutely. If I want the one with all the stuff on it, I'll order the one with all the stuff on it.
You'll get the deluxe. Okay.
Yeah, but no, in terms of that, if you want to, I don't like to really put the condiments on the sandwich. That's what the fries and the nuggets are for.
Okay. You know what? When we walked out that logic, I think that's a fair take. 464 says, I second John. Okay, so maybe that sparks a different conversation. Do you apply condiments to the chicken sandwich, or is that just a nugget and a fry thing like John's saying? For me personally, I always go with sauce on everything. Like, I'm the person that is putting the zero-calorie hot sauce on, like, everything, even when I'm cooking at home. I put hot sauce on pretty much everything. I have to have a condiment. So I usually go with the buffalo sauce for the chicken sandwich, the spicy chicken sandwich with pepper jack. Once again, I'm a spicy guy. I know that's not the common take. If I'd have a non-spicy sandwich, I'll go mustard and mayo, which, again, I know I'm going to be in the minority here, but that's just my personal preference. The text line's absolutely blowing up. We've got a mixed bag. I'm going to try and get to all you guys. So mail carrier Keith goes with ketchup. Chad the mailman chimes in and says, John hates safe sandwich eating. Three or four.
What do you mean I hate safe sandwich eating? If anything, I promote safe sandwich eating. Everyone's third favorite mailman in the upstate. Come on, man. What do you mean say safe sandwich eating? I'm not putting extra sauce on this. It's not getting all over myself. I'm trying to eat in the car. My goodness, we don't allow the man to criticize Nick Allen, and he goes completely off the reservation. He's lost his mind.
Yeah, Chad's got to tighten up, man.
Maybe we'll just make it 1.5 business days on the ban. I don't know if I can handle his texting if we can't text about Nick Allen.
Josh says the spicy sandwich with pepper jack, bacon, extra pickle, and Chick-fil-A's ranch. You might be onto something. You might be onto something, 905. Josh, you might be onto something here. You might be onto something. A couple texters are getting in with mayo. We're going to take an early break, and I'm going to unpack some of this on the other side. We can carry this topic for a little bit longer and have some fun here on the Roar. 654 Roar, if you want to get in. This was sparked by Kate Klubnik's Chick-fil-A order, which is, number one, a lot, and number two, a mixed bag of condiments, very specific side items and beverages. We'll unpack a little bit more of a food conversation on the other side and keep talking some Chick-fil-A stuff and more. 654-ROAR is the number if you'd like to check in with Faxon and John here on Facts on Sports.
Actual price will depend on product and subscription plan. Featured products are compounded drug products, which the FDA does not approve or verify for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription products require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate. See website for details, restrictions, and important safety information.
Want a boost in and out of the bedroom? Hims has you covered. Introducing a new 2-in-1 approach to level up your game. Tadalafil for better bedroom performance and zinc for testosterone support. Put it all together and you've got what you need to turn things all the way up. Getting started is simple. Just go to hims.com/radio to start your free online visit. Through Hims, you can access ED treatments, including pills, chews, and more, 100% online. No office visits, no pharmacy lines. Just fill out a simple intake form, and a licensed medical provider will determine if treatment's right for you. If prescribed, it ships free and discreetly to your door. Find affordable treatment options at up to 95% less than brand names at hims.com/radio. That's hims.com/radio. hims.com/radio.
If you haven't been to Elkmont, you haven't been to Clemson. There's something for everyone, including great lifestyle, men's and women's clothing, jewelry, and the most comfortable shoes from On Running Shoes, Birkenstocks, and UFOs. If it's game day you want, Elkmont has a great selection of all things Clemson with great brands like Vuori, Patagonia, Z Supply, and more. Find Elkmont in Powdersville and Clemson or online at ElkmontTradingCompany.com. That's ELKMONT TradingCompany.com. Go Tigers!
So you've decided you want to have your garage floor professionally coated, but with so many companies to choose from, who should you hire? For nearly 15 years, Iron Drive Floor Coatings has installed the highest quality concrete coatings all over the upstate. With over 1 million square feet installed and the most 5-star reviews in our industry, our guarantees stand strong. Don't trust just anybody to coat your garage floor. Trust the company with a proven track record of quality work. Get a free quote today at irondrivegaragefloors.com.
We're here with Eric Snyder, Snyder Tree Care. Eric, what's the culture of Snyder Tree Care?
As long as I'm in charge of this thing, and I've been doing this 30 years, the culture is people first. It's always people first. We're not going to make a decision to make profits over taking care of people. And it starts with our people, our employees. We offer, you know, benefits. We offer tacos or something every third Thursday when they come in from a hard day's work, just to say, hey, thanks for being part of the team. It's little things like that that seem to keep people real happy with us.
Give it to Snyder Tree Care.
Contractors, we know what it takes to build something great. Long days, hard work, and the right materials. At Harbin Lumber Company, we're here to make sure you've got everything you need to get the job done. Since 1917, we've been your trusted partner in building dreams, from framing lumber to finished materials. When you work with Harbin, you're not just getting quality supplies, you're getting a team that's got your back. Visit one of our local lumber yards today, and let's build dreams together.
Get ready for another exciting Wednesday on Out of Bounds, starting at noon right here on The Roar. Ben Milstead and I will be waxing poetic on Braves-Mets Game 2. We'll get you ready for Braves-Mets Game 3. We'll get back into lots of college football conversation, some ACC quarterback talk. Did you see what Steve Spurrier said about Arch Manning? Plus, Will Vandenbort, plus Hump Day Headlines. Big show plan. Come and join us, 654-ROAR.
You're listening to Facts on Sports with Faxon and John. Now let's get back to the show.
We welcome you back in. Facts on Sports with Faxon Childress and John Hay continues right here on The Roar. 654-ROAR is the number. We got much to discuss on the program. Phone lines open. Adams Co-Roofing text line open. We'd love for you to join us as we've been talking some Chick-fil-A. We've been talking condiments. We've been talking orders. We're going to wrap that up here shortly, but I do want to get to the text first before we put that topic on the back burner and start to talk about some Clemson football. And if you're just joining the program, this started because QB1 gave out a Chick-fil-A order. We had to discuss. And that's opened a very mixed bag on the Adams Co-Roofing text line. So, John, I will say... there is a large contingent of our audience that seems to be on your team, which is that condiments are reserved for the nuggets and fries only and not on the sandwich. So I got to give credit where it's due there. I put sauce on whatever. There's a lot of support and a lot of outspoken support for you on the text line from that takeaway. A couple other texters are getting in and saying, so this is the most unique order we've seen. And we're going to put this topic on the back burner here briefly, but Texter says, regular chicken sandwich, order the creamy salsa packet and crunchy bell peppers, put the chicken breast only in the bag, pour the salsa packet inside and shake. Put the sandwich back together and add the crunchy bell peppers. You will not be disappointed. I'm going to try this. This is right up my alley. I don't know if this is up everybody's alley, but this is right up my alley. I am going to try this. I can guarantee that, 928. So I will try this in the near future and let you know what my feedback is. If you've got a creative order like that where you go off the board, we'd love to hear from you as well. And John, maybe we can spark this into a different topic that's kind of like away from Chick-fil-A. You've got more knowledge in a lot of areas than I do. There have only been a few things, and I don't think anybody knows where I'm going with this, but hear me out for a second. There have been a few things like discontinued at restaurants or changed at restaurants in my lifetime, like restaurants that I frequent. I went to Chick-fil-A a lot growing up because we lived like 0.4 miles from a Chick-fil-A that was on the way to school. So we were at Chick-fil-A a lot, and that was back when I think Chick-fil-A was probably a little bit healthier as well, too, and cheaper and everything. It is what it is. It was like 2 decades ago at this point. But when I was growing up, when we would get breakfast at Chick-fil-A, the burritos had those bell peppers on them, and they had like a completely different breakfast burrito, and now they've like changed it and discontinued it. So I guess my question to you and the audience would be, is there anything at a restaurant that you can think of off the top of your head that has been changed and or discontinued that you would like to see back? I know a lot of people, like there's some like McDonald's like ice cream things that have been discontinued that a lot of people like get online and clamor for.
The machine
just
broken.
Doesn't work. Yeah.
off the top of my head, I can't really think of anything. Mostly because everyone's doing a snack wrap again this summer, so that was always like the one thing that's, you know, always yeah. seems to be the hot button issue on the internet.
The number one thing that I always see like online about this is the McDonald's like the baked apple pies that allegedly they discontinued, but I think those are actually like back in the rotation now. But that always stuck out to me. I never understood for the life of me why Chick-fil-A changed the breakfast burritos. I wanted the peppers. Texter gets back in and says, no more large milkshakes at Chick-fil-A. The watermelon slush at Sonic. Okay, let me walk this through. There's one that sticks out specifically to me, but now it's back. At Zaxby's, the birthday cake milkshake being out of existence for like 5 years, that was a terrible decision. I'm glad that that's been reintroduced. If you know, you know. Growing up, the kid whose dad is like the inventor of Zaxby's went to our high school for a couple of years, and like they would come in and give gift cards. We were at Zaxby's. I can guarantee that, John. We were at Zaxby's frequently growing up. Another texter says they've gone downhill. They stopped putting the seasoning on the fries. Used to be great. Got to put more seasoning. Definitely got to put more seasoning. Another texter getting in and saying Chick-fil-A spicy biscuit going away was brutal. Credit for bringing it back. Chick-fil-A's always on top of it, man. They're great. They're absolutely great. And a couple texters getting in on the birthday cake milkshake stuff as well. Another texter says, I was not happy when they took away the potato cakes at Arby's, but they did bring them back. That is something that I've realized. A lot of times they do bring them back. Texter 933 says, the Bojangles cinnamon rolls. Bro, if they brought them back, I'd be a solid 300 pounds. I never got to try that. I've only been to Bojangles like twice in my life, to be completely honest. I haven't frequented the Bojangles. In all honesty, I didn't grow up near one. So, yeah, is what it is. All right, we're going to shift gears to some football-related topics, but definitely always enjoy having some fun on the Adams Go Roofing text line. You guys are awesome with that. 654-ROAR if you want to check in. But, John, what originally sparked this conversation was talking about QB1, his Chick-fil-A order, right? I had a text earlier this morning on the personal text line. Ask me for what my expectations are for this wide receiver unit entering the season. And it goes without saying that there are loftier expectations for Clemson in just about every facet of the game this year than there have been since they made the national championship against LSU. I think maybe the subsequent year with the first year of DJ, right, and everything along those lines, or maybe after the Ohio State game, rather, with that season and what you were entering. But it goes without saying at this point in my eyes that the expectations this year are lofty. It's conference championship, it's 10-plus wins, it's playoffs, and it's winning a couple games in the playoffs. That's my expectation for this group. Now, as far as individual players and what production looks like, I have a couple questions for you on the wide receiver front, because Clemson is in a weird position where they almost have a surplus of talent and a lot of mouths to feed and a lot of mouths to account for, John. So I guess my question for you is, after receiving a couple texts this morning asking me to break down the wide receivers, what do I anticipate them to look like production-wise, What is the balance within Clemson's wide receiver room going to look like with five more than viable options and more? Wesco Jr., Williams, don't forget about old Tyler Brown, and then Tristan Smith, who's kind of the lanky game changer at 6'5".
You know, I've been struggling with this a little bit, trying to figure out how this is all going to work itself out. I think you're going to see a lot of riding the hot hand. I think you're going to see a lot of situational matchups. Like, I would be surprised if any one of these five has a substantial yard advantage over any of the other guys in the group. Like, would you be more surprised to see all five over 500 yards or have two pushing 1,000? Because I think it's more of the five around 500 where you'll have a game where Antonio Williams goes off, and then you'll have a game where coverages will adjust to try to double coverage Antonio Williams, so then T.J. Moore will have a big game. And then you're going to try to, you know, shade stuff to the right side so Bryant Wesco will have a big game. Another thing I'm also trying to figure out is how are you going to utilize the running backs in the passing game and the tight ends? Because we do not have Jake Brenningstuhl on this team. I like Olsen Pat Henry. I like Christian Betancourt. Josh Sapp, Marcus Dixon's down on the defensive side of the ball. Excuse me. But like with Sapp, Betancourt, Pat Henry, like,
Shefflin.
And Ian Shefflin and Logan Brooking. Like, I feel good about the room, but in terms of who's going to be the alpha from a pass-catching standpoint, like, I feel like all those guys are better inline blockers and give you more as a true tight end than what Jake Brenningstuhl gave you.
Yeah.
But what Jake Brenningstuhl gave you was a 6'7 matchup against a nickel corner or a safety or a linebacker that he had a size advantage over.
Yeah.
And it was more experienced within the passing game. So I'm really curious to see how do they try to supplement that stuff. Because I feel like you would agree with me, the last couple of years, Jake Brenningstuhl was a very good goal line red zone option.
Yeah. I mean, Jake was essentially, for lack of a better term, a big wide receiver for the better part of the last couple of seasons.
Correct. So now you have to change that. And this is the first time with Garrett Riley as the offensive coordinator where you don't have that option.
Yeah.
So I'm not saying that it's going to be bad, that there's going to be a drop-off or something negative is going to occur, but it's like I think these are the type of things that I'm very curious about with Cade Klubnik this year, is when times get tough on third down, what is the go-to? What is the safety blanket? What is the thing you're going to go to? You don't have Moffa to check it down to out of the backfield. You don't have the comfortability of Jake Brenningstuhl like you have had the last couple of years. I feel very good about the personnel that's assembled here. Extremely good about it. I agree with you. The best it's been in about 5 years. But you still have to have Cade Klubnik be comfortable in relying on those guys in those situations.
Yeah.
Especially with those tight ends. In terms of wide receiver, kind of bring it back to the question at hand here, I lean more towards I think you're just going to have games where everybody, you know, kind of has their own moment, if you will.
Yeah, I think the wealth is going to be spread around throughout the course of the season. And, you know, in a weird way, it's almost impossible to not spread it around with how many good players you have and how many mouths you have to feed. Like, all five of those guys deserve targets. I think we would all agree with that. I think everybody on Clemson's staff would agree with that. And it's also, to avoid being cliche and quoting Moneyball, I think they're just fine without Brenningstuhl. And I think part of it is because they can make up for it in the aggregate in form of Tristan Smith.
I definitely agree with that. I think in totality, the room is better as a tight end room this year than it was last year.
Yes.
However, we don't have yet a situation where Cade Klubnik is dealing with a pass rush on third down in a game scenario without Jake Brenningstuhl on the field.
That's true.
That is my point with that. I think the room in totality is better.
You got physical guys.
You have extremely physical guys, I think, and you have more willing blockers than you did with him. And no slight on him, but that's not the strength of his game. But we saw one of the things that Cade really grew last year was his ability to manage down and distance. And I thought Jake Brenningstuhl was a big part of that. And having the comfortability of Phil Moffa next to him in the backfield was a big part of that.
That's going to be a big element to this, too, is who is going to step up as the lead back and who is going to be the primary pass protection option on passing downs and what is that going to look like? Because we'll talk running backs at some point throughout the course of today as well at 6'5" Roar. But, yeah, you know, with wide receiver and tight end, looking at all the players, it's hard not to just be licking your chops and being so excited about what Clemson's got this season. That's the overarching theme here, is like, this is a good issue to have. You have a surplus. Having a surplus is never a bad thing.
Oh, no, we've been in a deficit for several years, and it's not a good thing. Like, yes, you would want to have this problem versus the ones we had in 21, 22, and even 23.
There have been games where you have been forced to play walk-ons, and that should never happen. It's not fair to those guys. It's not fair to the position coach. Like, it's not fair to anybody involved because of some of the injury issues that this room has dealt with over the last 5 years. But now you're freaking loaded. Like, you're loaded like 2015 to 2019 Clemson was loaded at wide receiver. You have dogs. You have NFL dudes. You have guys that are going to be drafted, and you have guys that are going to play on Sunday for a long time. I believe that to be the case with Wesco and Moore specifically. However, don't forget about Antonio Williams throughout the course of this process, because I feel like, John, the freshmen were so exciting last year, and Antonio was banged up a little bit, and it almost caused us to forget about how good Antonio Williams was and is at times. I think Antonio is a guy that could play himself into the first couple days of the NFL draft with a good season. The issue I have with the NFL correlation here, to go a little bit off topic, is kind of wrapping back to the original point of, I think all five guys are going to be in the 500 range. So, like, the production isn't necessarily going to look eye-popping for a guy like Williams this year, I don't think. But I think all five are going to eat, and I think Clemson's going to have one of the best offenses in the country and most explosive passing games in the country as a byproduct of that. How do you guard Clemson in so many different ways that they can line up? If they want to run the ball and go 12 personnel, okay. Well, we've got Ian Scheflin, Josh Sapp, and Olsen Pat Henry, and Bentancur that are all physical and ready to get after it. And guess what?
We think Ian Scheflin's going to be physical. He was physical on the basketball court. He was good under the glass. But putting on shoulder pads and a helmet and having to block a 260-pound defensive end is very different than boxing out a forward from Duke.
I agree.
The skill set is very different.
He is massive.
I'm not questioning the size or the athletic ability. We saw it for 4 years in Little John Coliseum.
It's also so weird
but
that
you're,
he's playing
but we're talking about a power forward playing football for the first time since high school.
He is.
And asking him to be a lead contributor on a team that we all believe has a shot at playing in the Final Four of the college football playoff.
I think he'll be in there rotationally.
Sure.
Like, but we had a couple texters ask, like, what his role is. Like, I don't know what his role is. I don't know if there's any way to accurately project that.
The coaching staff doesn't know what his role is.
Blocker?
You don't know what the role is until you actually get him on a football field in football equipment doing football things.
Yeah.
Because, correct me if I'm wrong, the only time this staff has had a chance to work with him was during the Dabo Swinney football camps.
Yes, I want to say that that's the truth, yeah. And then
he's out there coaching a camp. It's not a football practice for him.
Right.
It's a practice for high schoolers.
Clemson's got physicality at tight end, which is a good thing.
Yes.
And last year, I think a lot of people complained about the run game and they pointed the fingers in the wrong direction. I think that Brennan Stuhl hindered a lot of what you could do in the run game with his lack of willingness to block. And when you go back and you watch the tape from the TCU days with Garrett Riley, you see 12 personnel was much more frequently incorporated because he had two tight ends that were willing blockers. And for the first time in his stage as the Clemson offensive coordinator, that's the case now. And again, this isn't a slight against Jake, because everybody has good things that they do on a football field and bad things that they do on a football field. Jake, really good at being a pass-catching option. Not good at all at blocking. Olsen Pat Henry is the inverse as of right now. Not to say that he's not a viable pass-catching option, but he wants to get dirty in the trenches, and he wants to get physical, and he wants to run you over. So I think Clemson has more versatility with the departure of Brennan Stuhl, with what they can do in the run game from a concept perspective and a personnel grouping perspective at tight end, with Pat Henry, Bentancur, Sapp. Dixon's a defender now. He's still listed on the depth chart. I'm sure if they needed to use him in a pinch, they could, or maybe as a blocker at times. And then the X-factor wild card in Scheflin with whatever his role could potentially be. And then you look out wide, and you got T.J. Moore, Brian Wesco Jr., Antonio Williams, Tristan Smith, and don't forget about Tyler Brown either, is what a texter reminds us. Freshman All-American that went for 1,000 yards in Cade Klubnik's first year as a starter. So you're loaded. You have four or five offensive line starters returning. You have Cade Klubnik returning as the best quarterback in the country. You have 5 to 6 guys at running back that are capable and ready to get after it. You got to go out there and play up to the standard. And part of that is going to be these wide receivers producing at the level we anticipate them to produce, John. They've got to go out there and earn it. Like, obviously, it goes without saying, we all know how immensely talented each and every player in this group
is.
I just don't want the Kool-Aid to start to creep into that unit.
Well, you don't want the Kool-Aid to creep into the football program. I totally get that. But I also, like, you know, like we got a text in here. The only thing that's going to be able to cover Clemson's wide receiver group is the Baltimore Ravens secondary. Let's not get ahead of ourselves here, because the Pitt game and the Virginia Tech game and the Louisville game also happened last year.
Yeah.
Where that offense stalled. And yet you can make the case that it was the Phil Maffa injury that had a lot to do with it. Yes. But those games still existed.
Yeah.
So the
Louisville game happened.
Correct. And that's my point. I don't want to just sit here and act like there's going to be 5,000-yard receivers on this team and there's not a secondary in America that can handle them. This is still 18 to 23-year-olds playing college football.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
And defenses that were far less talented than the talent you possessed on offense last year shut you down. It wasn't just the Georgia game. So I don't want to be a wet blanket on the discussion here, but I don't want us to get too far carried away that there's not a secondary or a defensive scheme or a coordinator or anything that could slow down this passing attack.
Yeah, I don't think that it's a lock or it's a given by any means, and obviously it goes out without saying that you still got to go out there and play the games, and you still have to go out
right there
and execute.
Because if you don't have anybody emerge at running back, and the running game is what it was in the month of November in the college football playoff last year, then it will be actually fairly easy to stop this passing game.
You got to be able to run the ball. That goes without saying. That's going to set up everything you can do foundationally as an offense. But I will say this. I think that and we'll take this into the upcoming hour as well, John, because we got to get to break, and I know that. I do think Clemson's in the scenario this year where they can have the pass set up the run. And this is a term that I used frequently last year that Kevin Stefanski has kind of coined in Cleveland. A lot of times people use the traditionalist mindset that you have to use the run game to set up the passing game when it can be the inverse. And for a Clemson run game that struggled so frequently throughout the course of last season for a plethora of reasons, a team that's anticipated to come out and put up fireworks on the scoreboard in the passing game, if teams are consistently forced to put that pressure of bracketing outside wide receivers or playing too high safeties, a byproduct of that is going to be running lanes are open, and you're going to be able to run the ball. So we'll carry this Clemson football discourse into hour number three with Faxon and John. Stick with us.
WCCP-FM 105.5, Clemson, Greenville, Anderson, WAH.